go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, Ben, tell me what this statement means to you. You pay for the entire seat, but you only need the edge. Does that mean anything to you?
Yes, it means several things.
What does that mean?
Well, oh, Scott Benjamin.
Yeah.
And Ben Bolin. That's me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess we've got it. I thought you were going to say, I've got a question for you. But, yeah, I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm, you know, I'm the other guy. I'll tell you what it means to me. It means that we are finally getting to cover an episode that I have wanted to cover for a long time.
Car Stuff talks about
monster trucks.
Yes, monster trucks. And that line that I read earlier, that's the typical marketing line that you know, you'd hear every weekend before a big event, right?
But you'll only need the edge.
Exactly. And that's so true. So true. That's
it's crazy.
It really is. It's such a cool sport. Now, this is your idea for a podcast, right?
Well, you know, I'm from Tennessee. Monster trucks have been pretty big there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And also in Detroit.
Yeah.
It turns out the Silverdome, which I lived, I could see the Silverdome from where I lived. It played a huge part in the beginning of this whole thing, in the start of monster truck events, monster truck rallies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was right there in the midst of it, and I didn't know that it was like really the dawn of monster trucks. I guess I just hadn't thought about it because I was just right at that sweet spot. That was the age that I was kind of going to those types of things.
Yeah.
And it was all happening simultaneously. So I don't know, the history of this thing goes back about, what, 30 years now?
Yeah, yeah.
No, longer than that, right?
A little bit longer than that because this was, let's see, it's around 1974, I guess, that Bob Chandler starts actually building the vehicle that he wants to build. He worked in contracting for construction during the day, and he was always a 4x4 kind of guy,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he had a nickname that people called him, and that nickname was Bigfoot.
I like where this is going.
Okay. And so he was called Bigfoot because he had a little bit of a reputation as a speeder. Somebody's into
So maybe Leadfoot. This could
it
just
came
as
from
easily,
Leadfoot to be Bigfoot.
This could easily have been Leadfoot.
Mm-hmm. And so now let's keep in mind that the four-wheel drive vehicles that are nearly ubiquitous now,
mm-hmm,
weren't as common in the 70s.
Oh no, definitely.
And
definitely weren't.
You'd have to try to find one. So
well, you know what?
Yeah.
Sorry. Let's pause the history here for just a moment. And you and I talked about this off air.
Yeah.
We both have seen in our past, and we're talking late 70s, mid to late 70s, even into the early 80s, a lot of vehicles that shouldn't have been built on truck bodies, built on chassis, rather.
Right, yeah.
You know, car bodies, whatever,
sure,
added to truck chassis, right?
Yes.
You're from Tennessee.
Mm.
I'm going to assume that there's quite a few of these there. You might see the Trans Am that's 7 feet in the air.
Right, right.
Or the you know, maybe a hearse.
Yeah, you can check on the internet. There's a bug.
I have personal experience. I saw the first one I can remember was a purple El Camino that was in Indiana when I was a kid.
And was that in the family?
No, not in the family. It was down the street from a cousin's house that I stayed at all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that thing was amazing. Incredible as a kid. You know, it's like a toy come to life.
Yeah.
It really is. And there's a lot of different versions of this that kind of led up to what Mr. Chandler was building, right?
Right, yes. Okay. That's a really good point because what he eventually does when he decides that he needs to rely on his own efforts to make sure he can get his repairs done on his 4x4 and stuff,
mm-hmm,
what ultimately this leads to is that he and some buddies start messing with this vehicle, and what they end up doing is taking his 1974 Ford F-250 and giving it a 460 cubic inch engine and then boring that to over 640 and then a C6 transmission, and boom, Bigfoot number one is born.
Yeah, giant tires.
Oh, yes, yes, one of the most important parts.
Yeah. And a huge lift kit, right? Because, I mean,
huge lift kit.
Now, obviously, you know, the idea is to be as high off the ground in these types of things as possible. But he's just going from scratch. He doesn't even know what he's really doing here. He's just making a giant truck. He's not really going for what we consider now as a monster truck.
Yeah, originally not at this point. They wanted to test like climbing and off-roading abilities. The tires are 48 inches tall on the first one.
All right, and you know what? Those are huge.
Those are big.
But not what we're talking now, and we'll get to the modern trucks in a moment. But so here's – what's his name? Bob Chandler.
Yeah.
He's out, you know, at his farm or wherever he's located. He's got a lot of property. Uh-huh. He's out building this thing, and they decide one day, this is like in the early 1980s, actually 1981.
Yeah.
I bet I could crush that car.
Yes.
This car, this is so big. You know what would be cool is to drive this into town. Let's, you know, I could just park on top of any car I wanted to. It's probably a joke, right?
Yeah.
A lot of fun, you know.
Like this
just,
is, yeah.
I could get through traffic really easy. I just drive right over top of them. This truck is so big. And, you know, this is kind of an unheard of idea at the time, which is crazy to think of now because of what we've seen. But crushing cars was a brand new thing. And so they're out on this property out in a field somewhere in 1981.
Yeah.
Videotaping. And I'm sure this is a VHS tape, you know, that they're taping this with.
Mm-hmm.
VHS deck or whatever. They've got two cars that are apparently crushing cars. You know, like some people have shooting cars. These are two crushing cars.
Right.
Pulls up to them, and lo and behold, here's the first car crush on video by Bigfoot.
And let's also keep in mind, because I know a couple of people might write in about this, the first stuff we described there, those 48-inch tires and the type of engine and the lift, that's stage one, really. That's a prototype almost because they got to 66-inch tires. They, of course, they had to do a lot of work on the axle because you can imagine without a lot of work on the axle, it would be difficult to get that through. And the suspension and
you know, I think we can just say this thing is completely custom. I mean, other than the body work that's on it, this thing is completely custom. It's a home-built vehicle that was purposely built for car crushing. And so Bigfoot is born basically in, let's just say it's 1981 with this first car crush video, which you can find online, by the way. You can watch this, but there's some controversy here, Ben, because at the same time, other people were building trucks called like, I think King Kong, and there was another one called High Roller,
right,
and there was Cyclops, and they all claim that they were also crushing cars at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The difference here, Ben, is that Bigfoot was the first one with video proof.
Yep, hard documentation.
Video proof that they have crushed cars with Bigfoot. And you can watch the original crushing video on there's a site for Bigfoot specifically. And I want to mention just a couple more things about Bigfoot because this is fascinating history.
Bigfoot's
really
a dynasty now, too, by the way.
It's amazing. There's a site, you know, it's called Bigfoot4x4.com, right?
Right.
I think if you go to Bigfoot.com, you end up at some
it's
an independent film company. but Bigfoot4x4.com, and you can watch all these videos, but you can watch the original footage in 1981 of them crushing these two cars out in the field, and it's pretty cool. And knowing where that led, you know, what that led to, and that this is the first time. Now, here's how simple this video is.
Yeah.
You know, there's a small crowd that's cheering or whatever. They've actually got the back end loaded up with wood and stuff like that just because they wanted to keep the weight on the back end, you know, I think.
Right.
But you see that flying around in the video. It's pretty interesting. It's a funny – kind of a funny film.
Right, but it's not – you know, it's not something with dazzling production value or whatever.
No. You know? It wasn't – it was just to show what they could do.
Right. So we've got the controversy here, which I'm glad you mentioned, because from 1981 for the next couple of years, monster trucks are appearing to great acclaim and fanfare, but they're mainly sticking with this rolling over, crushing cars trick.
Yep, and in 1982, which is just 1 year after this little video surfaced, I guess some promoter got a hold of it and decided that, you know what, we've got these truck pull competitions that are happening, you know, where they have tractors or trucks that pull weight sleds. And we've talked about this on our podcast, I think, the weight pulling competitions.
Right.
As an exhibition at the Pontiac Silverdome in 1982, that is when Bigfoot did its first, like I guess I would say, large scale show.
Right.
Where you know, there's a big audience, and you know, there's instead of just being out in a field with a couple of people and videotaping it, they're in front of, get this, Ben, and this blew me away when I heard this number, 72,000 people.
Wow.
Now, this is incredible. Now, I think that's actually in 1983 when the 72,000 were there, but 1982 is when they did the first showing, the first public showing. In 1983, there's this footage that they call, it's kind of loosely called the flash attack footage, because the second that that thing jumps, that's when all these, I mean, the full stadium lights up with, remember flash cubes on cameras?
Yeah.
Everybody had flash cubes that you had to replace on the cameras.
So for all the younger listeners, I'll give you some old people tips here. The cameras used to not have an embedded flash. Phones weren't able to take pictures at this time. You would have to buy these cubes that were, consumables.
Yeah.
They would wear out over time, and you would have to, you have to physically attach them.
Single use.
That's the problem.
And some of them had four, and they would rotate around, and you get four shots out of it, and you have to replace the cube or a stick or whatever. All these flashes went off. I mean, 72,000 people at the Silverdome, Ben.
Yeah.
Most of them taking a photograph all at one time. It's pretty incredible. And and the crowd shots, because the one that I saw online, it's really pretty funny. I mean, just to see the way that, the people are dressed and the hairstyles and all that, all that goes along with this being 83, I guess.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. The film footage that I saw was from 1983 on the floor of the Silverdome when it happened. So it's really good footage. It's funny.
Yeah, and one thing that we're trying to point out here, if it's not too apparent, Bigfoot was wildly popular.
Yeah.
Those 70,000+ people were not booing. In fact, Bigfoot was so popular that Bob was forced to make more Bigfoot.
Yes.
Big feet.
Yes. Do you know what generation we're at this point, Ben?
Oh, gosh. Let's see.
I can tell you.
Wait. It's somewhere. It's somewhere in my notes.
He's going to get it, guys. He's going to get it. I'm going to have to let it out.
Is it more than 18?
It is 18.
Oh, good. Okay.
Nice work.
Whew.
You really pulled it out there. I'm impressed.
Well, Scott, you and I talk about our notes sometimes. I'm more of a fan of typing and printing, and you write down
in
hand.
So. Your notes don't stick out quite like mine do. I can look for Bigfoot 18 in great big giant black letters, and it's there. So
on a separate post-it.
Yeah. On a separate post-it. That's right.
Okay, so 18 iterations.
18 at this point. So we're talking, from the very beginning of 1981 with Bigfoot the original.
Yeah.
We're all the way up to this. Now there've been, each one of them has kind of their own little, storied history.
Right.
In the records that it sets. And I looked up a couple of these different records, and we'll just quickly blow through them if you get a chance. But, let's see. There's Bigfoot Bad Boy 3, which is, Bigfoot number 14. Bigfoot number 16 broke the Monster Trek world record for speed at Norwalk, Ohio on a drag strip of all places.
Wow.
They did the eighth mile in 7.85 seconds at 86.5 miles per hour. Now, that doesn't sound like it's ridiculously fast, but an eighth of a mile to go 86 miles per hour in something that large, that's pretty incredible. It's really cool to see. And all these videos, by the way, you can watch on Bigfoot4x4.com.
Yeah.
You can see the original Bigfoot number one Pontiac Silverdome footage from 1983, which I highly recommend. It's so cool to see the historical stuff. Bigfoot number 16, which is a retro Bigfoot, which has exactly the same body style as the original. This is number one.
Cool.
Yeah. And then, this is really cool. Bigfoot number 18. Did you happen to see the long jump?
Are you talking about the one that went over the jet?
No.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh. This is the one that jumped over a jet?
Yeah. Well, the jet was on the ground.
I kind of figured. Well, you know what? Looking at some of the commercials recently, I wouldn't be surprised if they did it, as it was flying by.
Well, and, on Bigfoot 4x4, you can see some trucks that jump over a 727.
Whoa. All right. Well, this one's, this is more for distance.
Okay.
This was a record that was set just late last year in September. They did a long jump, for the world record in Indianapolis, Indiana, 214 feet, 8 inches, Ben. This, when you're watching this is so crazy looking. It looks like it's fake. It looks like it's movie magic, but it's the honest to goodness world record for the long jump. It's incredible to see something this big jump that far. And I think maybe, you know, at this point we should tell them how big these things are and what their, you know, what their dimensions are maybe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If anybody didn't get the sense from the tires, these vehicles are definitely not light. They let's see, I've got some of my stuff here. Oh, okay. So we're talking minimum 10,000 pounds.
Okay.
And that's the low end. All right. So
5 tons.
And a monster truck's usually gonna be more than 10 feet tall. So around 11 feet tall or so.
Oh my gosh.
And then wider than it is tall. 12 wide is what I've got.
12 feet wide.
12 feet wide. That's huge. Not 12 feet. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And, so these, there are a lot of, there's a lot of fiberglass in there.
Oh yeah, the bodies are definitely fiberglass replicas at this point of the original bodies that, you know, the trucks that their namesake comes from.
Right.
If it's a Ford F-150, it's a fiberglass bodied F-150 at this point. It's not like, you know, the original Bigfoot that I would guess was probably the original metal body or modified metal body.
And at this point, the chassis are all custom.
Exactly.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah. And they have huge V8 engines. Now, we're talking about like these are, you know, supercharged, alcohol burning, blown engines that, you know, are 500 cubic inch engines that, you know, that's like 9.5 liters, Ben.
Yeah. One really popular model right now is, one popular engine is the, 540, cubic inch Merlin.
Okay. All right.
And, like if you go to, well, I don't want to dive into it too quick, but if you check out stats for a lot of places that have multiple monster trucks competing, one thing you'll notice is that a lot of them are using that Merlin.
Okay. All right. And so a supercharged 540 that's, you know, an alcohol-burning engine that you can imagine the power that comes out of these things. We're talking like 1,500 horsepower?
Yeah, to as much as 2,000.
So 1,500 to 2,000 horsepower is what you're talking in these things. 66-inch tires, they're tires that come from, well, actually, original purpose was like farm tires, right?
Yeah, like fertilizer spreaders
Is incredible. Oh, and one of the cool things about these things, and this is what makes something that we want to talk about later possible, four-wheel steering. They've got this really, really intense looking four-wheel steering. I mean, it's pretty dramatic. You can see it easily, when they make a tight turn. But it allows them to maneuver within the confines of whatever arena they're competing in much, much easier.
Yeah.
It's a lot more stuff to break.
Yeah, but they're a lot more nimble than they might appear.
They're very nimble. And in fact, it's truly surprising to see how nimble they are and how fast and far they can fly, really.
Dude, I know, right? I'm sorry.
No, we're both fans of this, so you know it's really not huge fans. I haven't followed the whole series or anything like that, but but I did go to many of those, and we're talking right at that sweet spot again, back in the early 1980s at the Silverdome. I was there in the 80,000 people crowds. It was a big deal. And it was really, really. It was kind of the thing to do on the weekends. You know, it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was loud.
Yeah,
it's probably part of the reason I can't hear very well now. It's really, really intense when you're inside an enclosed building and you've got, you know, these 1,500 horsepower engines that are just full throttle all night long. You can imagine what that's like.
Yeah, these don't exactly purr.
And I wasn't smart enough to wear ear protection.
Well, don't beat yourself up, man. These were also kind of a new thing at the time too. So
true.
You can't blame yourself. Little bit of the a couple facts real quick about the engines that I think will hopefully segue into something we're both excited to talk about. So these engines, I believe this is from the Bigfoot site. These engines are custom built, so that the Merlin we're talking about has a lot of customization going into it. They can burn up to 2.5 gallons of methanol each run.
That's quite a bit.
I mean, 250 feet.
When you're talking about like each run, I mean, you're talking about maybe the racing aspect of these, where it's really just one trip across, like there and back across the stadium floor.
Yeah, which might surprise some people that sounds a little bit more similar to maybe drag racing than it does to. And does to a stocker racing
or
something.
Yeah, but we're talking about like these are just about like drag racing engines in giant trucks.
Yeah, they're really absolutely. Now, Scott, they're short bursts of speed.
Yeah, exactly. And that quick burst of speed is what's required for what they do. Because,
yeah.
you know, the, when they're, you know, lining up for a jump, it's not like they're going to have, you know, when you see a, you know, someone else jumping buses or, you know, Evel Knievel or whoever.
Right.
They've got, you know, a 200-foot, you know, run up to the ramp.
Yes.
These guys don't have that. You know, they sometimes will put the front tires on the ramp and then gun it, and they're flying through the air, you know, 20 feet in the air. But that comes from, you know, the 10 feet up the ramp and that's all they had going uphill. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but I'm, again, we're getting into this fanboy area where we're both excited about it, and there's not enough good things we can say about it, really. It's so cool to watch.
Well, I can answer. I'd like to anticipate a question some people might ask, which is, hey, Scott, hey, Ben, why aren't the engines bigger? What's with the CI there? Well, the size of the engines, there's a limit on it. By some folks that you might hear of, you might have heard of before, dear listener. They are called USHRA.
Ah.
And they say that if you want to roll with them, you can only have 575 CI and below.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so there's a limit on the cubic inches.
Yeah.
Now, they're the organization, so the USHRA, the Hot Rod Association, they're the organization that markets the whole series of monster truck all the vehicles that mm-hmm. participate in this. And there's a little bit of confusion on my part, Ben. Maybe you can clear it up. Maybe you can't. I don't know. But I've heard of Monster Jam.
Monster Jam.
Okay. Now, I've heard of the Thunder Nationals.
Uh-huh.
Now, is it the Monster Jam Thunder Nationals, or is it two separate series? Because I thought that the Thunder Nationals were a separate series from the Monster Jam series, but then you see the two together at some places.
Yeah, and sometimes you see overlap between the vehicles.
Yeah, it's an odd thing that, like, it depends on how it's printed or how you read it, but I get the sense that they're separate things that sometimes come together. They're separate groups mm-hmm, that sometimes mm-hmm, come together for mm-hmm. certain events.
For like a freestyle or something.
Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not that up on the series at this point. I know, I love watching it. I love seeing it, but I'm not you know, following the tour or anything like that.
Right.
And I haven't been for many, many years since, you know, the 80s or the early 90s mm-hmm. maybe. So if somebody can clear that up for us, we'd appreciate it.
We would appreciate
but,
that.
But honestly, you'll see like the Monster Jam and Thunder Nationals together as like a Monster Jam Thunder National event, mm-hmm. which is kind of strange because it seems like they have different things. Now, they originally competed on bare concrete floors.
Yes.
You know, and they had, you know, a couple of cars lined up and they would jump these cars and, you know, it's like kind of a competition there, like one way there, one way back.
Right.
You know, for time. They also had wheelie competitions. They had donut competitions. And then freestyle.
Okay. Yeah. Now, did I jump the gun?
No, not at all. I think we should talk about freestyle and maybe move it on from there because freestyle to me, this is the coolest part. I think this is what this makes people lose their minds, Ben.
This is the more fun, but like
the crowds
the
go
funnest
crazy.
Part, more, go, most fun part.
They go crazy, absolutely crazy. And you know what? I don't blame them. This is so it's just such an adrenaline rush to even watch them do this. I can't imagine what it's like for the drivers to do some of these things to accomplish what they do in these amazing vehicles.
Yeah. So check it out. You've got a 10,000-pound vehicle. 60-plus inch tires, an engine that is probably half demon.
Well-suited for a drag car.
Well-suited for a drag car, and then you rev it up, and you drive up a ramp, you flip over once, you bounce so hard that you flip over again. I'm talking about that double flip video.
Yeah, sure.
And then you somehow land it?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you may think, like, these guys go out there, and I'll tell you this, and this is after watching we investigated this quite a bit over the last couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
and watching a lot of videos, and you know, just trying to catch up on the series and what's going on. And I'm sure that I probably made some mistakes early on in what we were talking about. I hope not, but you know, like maybe skipped over some stuff that was important in the development of the series. But let me tell you this: the freestyle competition continues to be the most popular of all the competitions, and there's a lot of driver skill that goes into this that you wouldn't think is there.
Yeah.
Initially. But when you watch a few of these and you watch, you know, let's say you watch as many as we have in the last couple
right.
of weeks.
Their control is apparent.
Oh my gosh. You realize that, you know, saving the vehicle at certain points, and it actually plays into the judging of this whole thing. Saving the vehicle, is definitely driver skill. I mean, there's a way that they can, you know, prevent rollover. They can upright the vehicle after it has rolled over. There's a lot of different angles that they can hit these things that mm-hmm. you wouldn't think. More throttle here, less throttle there.
Right.
It's really, really quite a skill.
And also, just so we're clear, like any other motorsport, and this is a legitimate motorsport, that any other motorsport, there is so much time spent on safety. There really is. I know it might look like these are just some devil-may-care people flipping gigantic trucks, but they do spend quite a bit. These drivers are exceptional. That's my point.
You couldn't survive the wrecks that they get into if safety wasn't a huge issue in this series. I mean, we're talking about like the Hans device and mm-hmm. all the strapping and the cages that are built around
the
them.
Remote interrupters.
Correct. For the ignition shut off. And it's just this part of the competition. This freestyle part of the competition started.
So cool.
What, in like 1990s, I think, the mid-1990s?
Right, yeah. Again, as we've said, it was primarily exhibition car crushing in the beginning.
Yeah,
and
racing.
And racing afterward.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third step in the evolution, if you will, is the freestyle.
The crowd favorite,
yeah,
if I would have to say.
Favorite.
I mean, people love the racing because, it's like a heat competition, elimination, where it's there and back and who can get there mm-hmm. fastest, and then there's a winner. But the freestyle competition is where they get to go out and they just, and I'll tell you the rules or how they're judged, if you want
yes,
to know.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so you get this certain time and you're supposed to use the entire time that's allotted to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're judged on speed, aggression, your jump height and length. Of what you attempt to do, the tricks that you employ throughout that whole thing,
right.
Like the combination maybe, saves, which is again we talked about that. It's purely driver skill in most cases. Some cases it's luck,
right?
But mostly driver skill, and then also another one that's really cool, spectacular moments is another one that the judges actually consider in their judging is spectacular moments, which is anything out of the ordinary that happens. Like, let's say that, and I want to follow this up in just a moment with a mention of a certain vehicle that is known for spectacular moments. But anything out of the ordinary that happens, like let's say you snap a wheel off and you continue on, mm-hmm. And yet you still pull off these incredible tricks. Your steering breaks and
right.
you still continue to, pull off these amazing tricks. That's all noted in the judging. And if you happen to be at one of these events and there's a tie, the judging, because there's truly judges at these things,
right?
And they're judging by points, this point system. If there's a tie, sometimes there will be then a cheer off by the audience for who wins, which I think is kind of cool because that's kind of going way back. That's how things used to be judged, really, is
during jousts.
Dance offs or whatever.
Right,
who's the greatest here? Let's hear the cheer meter, And this is kind of neat too.
What's that?
There's a secret judge that no one knows about, which can sometimes at bigger events break the tie, which is kind of a cool idea that there's this secret judge, someone that's watching that no one else is aware of that is a judge that will break a tie.
I'm picturing that. I'm picturing the bad guy from Inspector Gadget. Where you just see the back of the chair and the hand.
How cool is that to be only used in a certain an emergency situation, like emergency. There's a tie at the freestyle competition at Monster Jam.
An extraordinary situation.
Exactly.
That's really
so,
cool.
So I think that's cool. And the whole thing, just visually, freestyle is so shocking to me. It's just an incredible. I can't believe that a 12-foot tall, 10,000-pound vehicle can launch itself 20 feet in the air.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't watched one in, let's say, 10 years.
Yeah, do yourself a favor.
You will not believe what they're doing with these trucks. And the one vehicle that, to me, and I've got this list here that we didn't get to.
Oh, yeah.
We're running a little longer, I think. I don't think we're
going to.
But, there's a huge list of Monster Jam trucks.
Which you can see on the Monster Jam website.
Exactly. The Monster Jam website, which is, I think, Advanced Auto Parts is the sponsor at this point.
Right. They even have their own vehicle.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah, they have the Grinder is what it's called. I'm looking at my list. But there's a lot of different vehicles, and they all have their own characteristics and features. There's something that I think you should look at in particular. And it's a vehicle that never seems to disappoint in the clips. It's called Maximum Destruction. Have you seen this vehicle?
I was wondering if you were going to say Maximum Destruction or Gravedigger.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gravedigger's an old school truck. It goes way back. Yeah. But Maximum Destruction is slightly newer, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen something as dramatic in this type of competition as what Maximum Destruction does. And
It lives up to the hype.
It's funny, but it truly, to me, it stands out. And they actually have what they call Max D moments. And they have like a countdown from like 10 to 1. Uh-huh. And if you watch them, you know, there's like a little lead in of what happened and, you know, the date that it happened or whatever. And then they show you the full freestyle segment.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, Ben, it's truly, like I said, it's shocking what this thing can do. I just had no idea that they advanced so much, because I remember I'm talking like Bigfoot 1 or Bigfoot 2 days when I was watching them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now we're up to, you know, this Maximum Destruction. And there must be, it looks like 75 or 80 trucks on this list, maybe? I'm just guessing.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
There's several of them. And they've all got their own features and high points.
Their own story.
Yeah, exactly. And talents and, you know,
talented
drivers.
Their own driver team, their own their race team, and also their own kind of family, if you will, of related vehicles. Like, not only is there Gravedigger, there's Gravedigger the Legend.
Oh, yeah. There's a son of Gravedigger or whatever.
Yeah.
A son of a Gravedigger, that's what they call it. There's so many different versions of these now, mm-hmm. and they're on tour all the time. I know that, you know what, as a matter of fact, this is going to date this podcast, but there's one in town this weekend here.
Ah, yes. The weekend we're recording this is just a few days into February.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and there's an event happening this weekend. I'm not going to be able to make it. I didn't know it was even happening until I started researching this and found out the dates. But I may in the near future make plans to go to one of these just from based on what I've seen in these videos.
We should go because these trucks are in 50 different cities each year. They're continually on tour.
They really travel a lot.
There's one thing that we have to talk about. I'll never be able to apologize to my childhood self if we don't.
What's that?
I mean, I'll never be able to make it up to that kid. Scott, what is 30 feet tall and eats cars?
Oh, I know this one, Ben.
You know it. What is it?
I do. It's there's two names.
Okay.
Is it Truckosaurus?
Or?
Or is it Robosaurus?
Now, it for our purposes, it's Robosaurus because we don't live in the world of The Simpsons.
Oh, I knew there was a distinction.
Yeah, that's the distinction.
And, okay.
Truckosaurus is
fictional.
But
based on reality.
Based on Truckosaurus is the Simpsons version based on Robosaurus, okay. Which is real. Robosaurus, for anybody who for some reason doesn't know, Robosaurus is a gigantic, flame-breathing, car-crushing thing that people would bring around to monster trucking events a lot, and you know, other demolition derbies, stuff like that. And the idea was sort of a take on Transformers. And so, if you're a kid and you're at these shows, then the idea is that Robosaurus has driven to the, like, disguised himself as a vehicle, semi or something.
He looks like a giant RV or something like that.
Right, right. And that he's come to this place to transform so that he can eat cars. Now, of course, there are plot holes in his origin story.
Yeah.
Like, he's driving by cars he could eat. But this is a really, really cool thing. We posted it earlier on our Facebook, and for me, there's a bit of nostalgia here, but I think we're on the same page with that.
Have you ever seen Robosaurus in person?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, you know, it's still out there. It's still somewhere. I don't know where it is, but it is out there.
Recently got auctioned.
I had the great fortune to see this in, you know, live when it was, like, this was the big deal, right? At the Silverdome.
Yeah.
And it came out. It looked like an RV. It transformed into this monster that was suddenly staring us in the eyes, you know, 80 feet up or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
and it did pick up, you know, a giant car, like an old late, you know, 1970s type car.
Yeah.
Huge car. Picked it up, held it up to its mouth, and then, you know, used the flamethrower to barbecue the thing right in front of us.
And then
dropped it.
Yeah.
Dropped it from that height. That's so cool to see that happen.
It's 20,000 pounds of force when it bites.
It's amazing. Wait, 20,000? So it truly does crush the car when it bites it.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, one of those cranes that, you know, doesn't do anything when it collapses on it. It's this is this is truly crushing the car and cooking it with this monster flamethrower thing that it's got.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
An incredible show.
It's got a human pilot too in the head.
How neat! What a fun time.
20-foot flames, those teeth on it. Scott, the teeth are 4 feet long.
That's a good day when you see Robosaurus.
Well, unless you're in the car, he's eating.
Well, that's true.
So obviously, the Simpsons fans are Robosaurus. The Simpsons guys are Robosaurus fans too, because they have Truckosaurus, which, if you watch some, I think Bart the Daredevil is one of the episodes with Truckosaurus.
Now I have to go watch that on my desktop.
Well, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap up here. We've had a good time doing this monster truck episode.
And for any holes in the history or whatever, I apologize, but we're fans of this.
We had a tough time on this one because it's so cool.
Yeah, there's so many angles on this. The fiberglass bodies that are so amazing that we didn't even get to.
Yeah.
All the different trucks, and we only got to mention, like, Maximum Destruction and Bigfoot.
And everything that Bob Chandler did, I heard him called once the Mario Andretti of monster truck racing, and he really is a pioneer. So
aptly named.
He made so many advancements that we have not talked about in this podcast, but I do want to take a moment to thank Mr. Chandler for enabling, us as well as millions of people now to enjoy monster truck racing, monster truck competitions.
Yeah, I mean, tens of millions of people. It's an exciting, exciting thing to witness. And seriously, if one comes near you anywhere into, an arena locally or whatever, make an effort to get there. It's so worthwhile.
So when Robosaurus, the last update, he was sold for $575,000. I have considered starting a Robosaurus rescue fund if you guys are interested.
Is that what the cup on your desk is for?
That is what the cup on my desk is for.
It's going to have to be a lot bigger.
Well, one step at a time, all right? Dream big. I've got big dreams, Scott. So we're going to go ahead and head out of here. We would love to hear from you guys if you have any monster truck experience, if you have some stuff you want to tell us more about, or just a lot of people have been sending their list of their favorite cars.
How about this?
I'm enjoying
this. If you have a photo of a monster truck event from, like, let's say the early days, like the 1980s.
Sure, yeah.
If you can, scan it and send it along. I love looking at that stuff.
Yeah, you can post it on Facebook, you can drop us a line at Twitter, or you can always send Scott and I an email directly at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.